Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together.
Sydney, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. It's great to meet you, Ian. I am in sunny San Diego, so feeling good.
Amazing. I am in rainy, foggy San Francisco and very jealous, but but thank you. Thank you for joining us today and welcome to the Innovators Inside podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, totally. So for those that don't know her, I'm just thrilled to have Sydney Thomas join us. So, you know, Sydney Thomas is the founder, general partner, and I love this, the conductor at Symphonic Capital, where she's investing in companies making life better for the 99%. Sydney, I'd love to start there. That's such a clean, delightful thesis. We'll dig into your background a little more later, but could you maybe introduce yourself, tell us more about what you're doing at Symphonic and how you got there?
Yeah, happy to. So I am investing in companies that are closing access gaps, particularly around health and wealth. I got to this solution after a lifetime of learning. I spent my undergrad at Duke University studying wealth inequality, went to New York City soon after that, working in the Bloomberg administration and doing a lot of work in city government where we have to build products for everyone, and got exposed to just where those gaps were and where the cracks were. Went to Berkeley for business school to dig in further there and kind of had a bit of an identity crisis myself, and that I thought I was going to be a public sector employee for my entire life. And when I realized I wasn't, I was like, oh no, where do we begin? Let's start.
That's an identity crisis, all right.
Yeah. It really was. We had to start from the beginning. So I spent a lot of time doing coffee chats and what are those called? Like the interviews where you just like ask someone to pick your brain.
Those informationals. It's like Business school's like, you go do informationals. You do that.
Literally, informational interviewing was my full-time job.
Yeah. You know what, though, like on one hand, so as someone who went to business school myself, I think that's a really hilarious thing to joke about. On the other hand, as somebody who spends a lot of time with founders talking about discovery, like what were you doing? You were discovering, right?
That is such a beautiful way to put it. Yes, I was discovering. So spent a lot of time in discovering what I wanted to do with my life and found VC through happenstance. It wasn't the first thing on my list, and found it through interning at a startup. Got really excited about the opportunity that the folks who were holding those checkbooks had to create the future that they wanted to see exist. And that realized that's what I've been trying to do with my career my entire life. And so took it very seriously and went back to school, signed up for LinkedIn Premium, cold emailed hundreds of new people to do new informational interviews, and found myself a seat at one of the first pre-seed funds in the Valley, and worked serious grind for almost 7 years to build that thing, and learned a lot and realized that I had something else I wanted to build. And so launched Symphonic Capital about a year ago.
Well, congratulations for getting Symphonic up and running. Tell us about it. Yeah. What are you doing there?
Yeah. So I saw a gap in the market for early stage investors who have a real interest in not just investing in the company, but also supporting the company for the real marathon-like amount of time that it takes for that company to grow into an IPO backable IPO candidate. Mm-hmm. So we are investing in companies that we believe will IPO one day. and investing in them within their first institutional round and pairing them with the skills and expertise and knowledge that they need to grow. And so our whole thesis is that the best founders actually aren't going to go into a corner and just kind of figure it out on themselves by themselves. And, you know, just like one day you turn around and it becomes a unicorn. The best, sure. Right. The best founders actually need care, support, help, just like you would expect from anyone who is successful.
You know, so you're speaking my language on that, right? I mean, obviously, we at Alchemist are an accelerator, and a lot of we do is that partnership and that care, love, support. But I think there's something really kind of powerful about what you're saying is that the best founders aren't going to stand on their own brilliance, real or perceived. The best founders are going to be the most effective at finding, accessing those resources that are going to advance their mission. I love that as a sentiment. As it comes to, you know, Symphonix, we'll come back to your thesis, but it sounds like you are investing with more than just capital then.
Exactly. So we are investing with capital, but also with a wraparound support services and focusing on how are we helping these founders really track towards KPIs that are really fundamentally impactful for their business. So one of the things that I like to say a little cheekily, but actually it's true, is that when founders are raising their first round of capital, on the last slide, they always have a slide that says, in 12 to 18 months, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Oftentimes, once they raise that capital, you never see that slide again. Nobody knows at the seed round what those expectations were, what the benchmarks were. And our question is, why? The founder knows what they want to do. We know why we backed them. Why not build out a process that holds those founders accountable and helps them achieve those goals so that they are really successful over those 12 to 18 months?
So I love that because you're putting a lot of intention around, you know, the metric and accountability around it. That means that you have to have some confidence that they've got it right. They've got that 12 to 18 months roadmap right, which can be a little tough at the pre-seed stage, right, where you're investing. So how do you do that?
Yes, such a great question. And one of the things that we say a lot is, you know, you ask 10 folks what pre-seed is and you get 10 different answers.
13 sometimes.
Right. Some people say pre-seed is back of a napkin. Some people say pre-seed is deck and maybe an MVP. Our thesis is that we are really excited about companies that have built something and have what a early customer traction. And so when you have that, you usually have a pretty strong point of view of, okay, this is at least directionally accurate of what needs to be built and what we need to do next.
Okay, cool. And so is this part of your diligence process? Is this part of your post-investment process? How do you think about that?
Yeah. So we are pretty data-driven on our diligence process and our post-investment process. So we ask the questions to suss out whether or not these companies are the right fit with our diligence process. And we also have a pretty transparent website that outlines these expectations that we have of founders. And then post-investment, we work really closely with the founder, expect to connect with them at least monthly to support them in ways that they need to help them reach their goals.
Got it. Okay. That makes total sense. I want to talk more about this thesis, the 99% and the making life better for them. What does that mean to you? And what is the opportunity that you see in that space?
Yeah. So for us, I spent almost a decade in the Valley and what I saw was a lot of navel gazing.
Ivory tower navel gazing.
Yes.
And okay.
What actually do we need? What are problems that we would like? What are solutions to challenges that I face in my life? And the uniqueness of the Bay should never be taken for granted. That is such a unique community. And I think I loved living in Oakland, and I think that it creates a lot of really interesting things, but what it isn't is reflective of the rest of the country. And there's a lot of innovation that is happening in places like Atlanta, like Boston, like South Bend, Indiana, that just isn't getting the same amount of attention because they don't have the same amount of capital.
100%.
So our thesis is, let's find them. We're all on Zoom anyway.
So you're scouting, and the places where folks maybe there's not as much noise, there's not as much capital, there's not as much, frankly, competition for you in the system in South Bend, Indiana, or Houston, or Memphis, wherever you may be. Is that, do I have that right?
We're definitely really excited about investing in companies that are outside of the Bay Area. What we're seeing, though, is more competition in these places. I'd like to say that we are leaders in this space, but we're not the only ones in this space.
And that does make sense. I mean, Alchemist has an office in Memphis for similar reasons, actually, right? And in addition to internationally. And I do see just a ton of opportunity. But you talk about mostly investing in health and finance. So how did you identify those as sort of the sectors that resonate with the 99%?
Yeah. I mean, we think of those as foundational backbones of anyone's life. If you're not feeling financially healthy and if you're not physically healthy, what can you do? You're put in a really difficult position. And so we like to go back to the basics on everything we do. And we think that those are two really foundational elements of our economy and our society that we're excited about seeing a lot of innovation in.
And when you are, you know, when you're out there talking to, for instance, your LPs, right? And you're saying, all right, here's why this mission makes sense. Here's why we're going to have impact in the world and maybe, you know, return some capital doing it. What do you tell them about that? Do you see some trends in the world that are like, okay, there's more focus and attention in this area? Does my question even make sense?
Yeah, I mean, well, the high level is that both of those spaces are trillion-dollar spaces. And so it's quite easy when you're focusing on a sector that has that market size to find a company that has the potential to return your fund multiple times over. Our other thesis is that the 99% is the majority of the country. And so these aren't niche solutions. We're looking at solutions that are actually applicable to so many people. And that opportunity to impact that many people is, one, extremely humbling for me and the reason why I come to work every day, but then two, a really exciting opportunity from a financial perspective as well.
I love that. I'm sensing so much like camaraderie here. There's actually like, there's all these little things where if I had like stubbed my toe instead of tripped, I might've ended up in public policy myself.
Oh, cool.
Also, here's what I'm hearing in you that I love. And I think it's really powerful as an investor, but it's also just kind of speaking to me. It's like that, you know, it's that leverage. Like if you put that dollar in at the right place, you give the right advice, you find the right person and give them the right encouragement, whatever it is, like that impact can be amplified massively. It hopefully in terms of economics, definitely in terms of the number of people that you touch in the world. And I think that's actually pretty cool.
Thank you.
I don't know. Motivates me. I spent a large number of years at Microsoft, probably too many, although it's an amazing place. But I used to half joke that sometimes it felt like, you know, I was sitting on a lifeboat on the side of a ship, like knocking on the ship with a hammer to get it to turn. And, you know, but the cool thing is you're not going to get to turn much, but you're going to move a lot, right? When you do it. And it sounds like you've maybe found a little more direct approach than trying to hammer a cruise ship into another direction.
Honestly, really. And this is like, I think One of the most surprising things when I left the public sector to come to the private sector was how similar the especially large companies like a Microsoft, like a Google. Google is essentially a small city.
Yes. Not that small.
Right? It is like a little state running its own thing. And similarly to Microsoft, and the similarities were really cool to notice. And I think I hope and that more people go on both sides. So I still hold hope for you to go to the public sector.
It could happen. I was genuinely, I thought I was State Department track was the public sector I was heading down. But, that'd be fun. So, okay, back on track. So I want to come back actually to those big corporates and enterprises in a little bit. So we're gonna hold that thought because I think they have a huge role to play in the world of entrepreneurship as well. But let's just talk a little bit more about, some of who you're meeting mm-hmm. out there. Do you have any either, founders you've invested in or just folks that you've met recently that really stand out? Because I'm kind of curious to hear what founders are doing these days.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I get to meet with some really cool folks. I think that what I'm seeing a lot of innovation in right now is Medicare and Medicaid. There's a really interesting transition that health systems and health plans are having to go towards value-based care, which means that we are focusing on, truly it's in the name, what types of care are providing the most value to folks' lives, which opens up a lot of innovation and around targeting really specific solutions to communities like ones that I'm excited about. It's so hard to answer this question because two of the companies that are solving these problems, we're in final negotiations with right now. And so I don't want to
You can't air it, but it's such a fun space and we'll check back and talk about did the check go through? Tell us how excited you are.
That sounds great.
But it makes sense, right? Like you say, that is a fundamental transformation in how health payments, I think, happen in this country, right? I mean, I'm a naive outsider, but I've certainly heard it. And so I understand where you're coming from on the size of the opportunity, but also the direct line to how this is going to change a person's life on the other end, hopefully for the better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I want to stick on this just for a little bit because, value-based care is one, but, what else is coming for sort of the 99%? What are the other really big problem spaces that you're seeing or that founders are bringing to you?
Mm-hmm. We're starting to see a number of companies pitching us around how to create more, I don't want to say it's not thoughtful, but more AI that's trained with data that is also representative of mm-hmm. the entire country. And so what we are seeing right now are companies pitching us that are excited about training AI so that it has more accurate information so that then it can be used to make more accurate predictions. So an example of this is in healthcare, we're starting to leverage AI to make recommendations and to make decisions sometimes around patients' health. And if that AI information is only representative of a very small sliver of the population, it actually won't
come
to the right conclusion for underrepresented populations and more unique populations more generally. And so I'm really excited about how are we making sure that we're doing, what they say is trash in, trash out, or garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
How are we making sure that these tools that are really fundamentally exciting and important innovations are actually leveraging the right data sets so that they can come to decisions that are helpful and not potentially actually quite hurtful for these communities.
I think that's such a great example, right? I mean, obviously, when we're talking about AI, I don't think I'm saying anything anyone will disagree with, right? When you say that those who have access to the data have the power, but there's a flip side of that, right? you're highlighting that when you don't have access to the right data, your outcomes are going to be skewed. And I like the example you gave, partly to be perfectly honest, I might get myself in trouble here, but like it's such an objectively true apolitical statement, right? We're not going down the path of kind of the social side. You're saying, look, your medical outcomes are going to be worse if you don't have data from the patient set that you're treating, or extend that example. And oh, that's fascinating. I think that's such a fascinating space to think about. So you said you've seen a few founders come to talk to you about this. And I think, how do you as an investor separate your kind of your excitement about the space, but also your knowledge or maybe certainty that this has to be solved and someone will solve it? How do you separate that from your investment decisions so you know that you're backing sort of the right founder?
I think that honestly, it's my partner, Shruti Shah, who is on board at Symphonic, who keeps me honest. There is so much, I think, focus in early stage investing around just like saying yes really quickly and, you know, having the founder, knowing the founder is the right one and the business is the right one after 10 minutes on the phone call. And, you know, we're doing a 10-year long investment. That is the expectation of my investors. And what I want to be really thoughtful about is not just that I am really excited about the founder and the opportunity, but actually that there's a there, that the founder, I've pushed the founder in ways that make me feel really comfortable that they've also understand the gravity of the situation that they're entering into. I think this is, you know, maybe a longer conversation, but a bit of the difference of how venture moves today than maybe in the, I call it the peak of the hype cycle a few years ago, where everyone was like,
take the money.
Money grows on trees. What does it mean like, anyway?
Yeah.
Versus now it's like, well, actually, you were saying you were going to build a business, not just that you're raising money. And so let's focus on the business. And that's a lot of our work at Symphonic.
Got it. Yeah. Well, I like that. We get so hung up on great, like zero interest rate or higher interest rate cycles and all that. But, you know, there is something to be said for asking the very simple questions, right? Like, is there a business here? And recognizing, I don't know, in my opinion, also just recognizing that this is not yet a science investing at the early stage. Maybe it will be someday, you know, we're probably all going to get replaced by AI at some point here, but it's an art. And, you know, there is, I don't know, I do feel like there is a lot to be said for the principles that you bring to sort of inform your gut judgment on investing.
Yeah, exactly. It's both. It's both.
Yeah.
And when AI replaces us all, I will happily be on the beach just chilling. But, you know, we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. And to your point, we can't necessarily trust it to make the right decisions yet anyway.
Exactly.
Well, okay. So I have one kind of, I don't know, tough or fun question for you in this space, right? You talk about your desire to make an impact. And impact is one of these words that really risks you getting pigeonholed, right? We run impact programs as well, and we make some impact investments, but it's so easy to draw a straight line from the word impact to nonprofit or, you know, charity. When you're talking to your LPs, to your partners, to your deal flow sources, how do you avoid that trap?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, and this is similar to what I said about pre-seed, ask 10 people what they think about impact and you'll get, like you said, maybe 13 different answers. And I think that's true because nobody really knows. And well, maybe they know what it is and they have a really specific answer for themselves. And so the way that we talk about impact is that we're just really clear and very explicit about, for us, what impact means is that we are actually having a direct influence on a large swath of the population and in a way that actually makes their life better. That has no real indication of whether or not, or truly what type of company it is. And so for us, I'd say that's how we think about it more generally. And then we have a whole nother list of questions that is very focused on, will this become a $500 million, billion outcome?
Absolutely. Okay, makes total sense. So I want to come back to that corporate question that, you know, whether we're talking about Google or Pepsi or Aetna or whoever it might be, a lot of our audience here are corporate innovators. They're folks that are trying to drive change from the inside of large organizations, sometimes with success, sometimes they feel like they're beating their head against the wall. But I would state to you a thesis, a strong belief that I have that, well, startups are, of course, amazing and founders are heroes. They also take a dependency on the passionate innovators, the folks within enterprises who are willing to take risks and who have the distribution, the brand, the capital that founders often need, right, to maximize their impact. So I want to chat a bit about that right now. And specifically, you know, if you're working in health and finance, your founders are, I would assume, having to partner with big companies. How's that going? And what advice do you give to your founders when they're thinking about, all right, like, how do I scale through into a health system or whatever other questions they may have?
Generally, we only look at digital health companies that are selling through insurance. And so almost always they are working with a large enterprise from day one or looking to do it. We leverage, honestly, and this might feel a bit out of a cop-out, but it's true, is we really like working with founders who have already worked in those types of institutions or know them intimately because they know how to navigate those organizations. And particularly in healthcare, that's like 75 to 80% of the battle is knowing which number to call. And in fintech, the companies that we've gotten really excited about more recently have a similar model in that they're selling to like a credit union or to another large enterprise with the expectation that it's more of a B2B2C model where they get that impact with the customer through the work, through the connection that that other business has to the customer. And it's a similar challenge in that a lot of it is figuring out who are your champions within these organizations in order to get across the finish line with that sales cycle.
Makes absolutely perfect sense. And I love it. I think that point also about, you know, looking for the founders that have the lived professional experience, right? They, whether it's navigating an organization, understanding the problem, I think that is part of the art and the science of this investing. And I think it makes a ton of sense.
And I think that that flies into the face of what folks think of when they think of a founder. Think of a guy dropped out of Harvard, has no work experience, and is just going to break things until he feels good.
When you look at the data, actually, I think it's actually pretty surprising how opposite of true that is.
Exactly.
With a couple of unfortunate keywords that you said. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, okay. So let's enter the fun complaining and commiserating portion of the podcast. You know, what you're doing is hard, but what your founders are doing is hard, right? Driving change in the world is hard. Driving change in healthcare, a lot of people have died on that hill. So like, what makes it hard? What are your founders just like venting to you about, complaining about? And what do you tell them?
Well, this goes back to one of the questions that you asked too about impact. One of the things that we care a lot about are founders who are solving a problem that they have experienced or that their community has experienced themselves, because that has a direct correlation with how long and hard they'll fight to fix this problem. And so if they see this as immediately relevant, like if I fix this problem in healthcare, my mom wouldn't have had that really negative experience that she had with a doctor 6-12 years ago. That's a challenge that you are interested in solving potentially for your entire lifetime. And those are the founders that we're looking to pair ourselves with are ones who care so deeply about the problem that they're solving that they are willing to face significant adversity in order to fix it.
I love it. Makes complete sense. So what is one piece of advice that you would offer to somebody who thinks of themselves in that light, right? They're like, I have lived this problem. I am mission-driven to change it. I'm going to go be a founder. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give that person?
I would say first, and this is advice that I got actually from another founder, is do you have your community that you need around you to support you? Because this is what you're signing up for is a long road. Who has your back? I think that is such an important part of the founder journey that folks don't talk about often. It's like you go to back to some of the, you know, tropes. It's like you drop everything, you move to San Francisco, you live in a house with all these people and you hope for the best. That doesn't have to be your story. Maybe your story is you stay where you are, you figure out how to get childcare for your kids based off of the healthcare insurance that your spouse has, and you realize you have like a year's runway of actually just figuring this out and putting your own feet to the fire and doing everything that you can to make this start generating some amount of traction. I think that there's so many different ways to be a successful founder. Somebody was telling me this. There's like, I think it was Peter Thiel, not to give Peter Thiel any more airtime than he needs, but he said, there's a million different ways to be successful and there's only one way to fail, something like that. Like all founders, all companies that fail have something similar in common, and all companies that are successful have very little in common. And I think that's such a nice reminder of this is your company. This is your story. How do you want to build it in a way that's sustainable for you?
Yeah. Well, and it's such a statement that kind of goes against, you know, your default assumption, right? Like, oh, you know what? Find your path. Every company that succeeds, it actually makes sense. It's almost by definition stands out from the pack. It's a little bit different. I love that. Well, okay. And so let's broaden this out. We're in advice giving mode. So like to whoever might be listening to the podcast, what is your favorite piece of life advice that you've maybe received that you would love to pass on?
Oh man, I just heard this recently and it got me into a super reflective mood. There's a book written that's called 4,000 Weeks. And okay. Apparently that's the entirety of our lives. And when you think of our life as being only 4,000 weeks, that feels like nothing, like truly feels like nothing. And so just this reminder of the urgency of living whatever life you want to live now is something that I reflect on a lot.
We'll make sure to put a link to the book in the show notes. I haven't read it, but it sounds fascinating. And yeah, it would cause some self-reflection.
Okay.
Oh, man. Well, this is great. Sydney, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. For folks that are interested in following you more, hearing more about what you're up to, where should they look? LinkedIn, your podcast? Where should folks follow you?
Yes, please check out my LinkedIn. I am not on X. Don't even. Please don't find me there.
You called it X.
I know. If you know what that means, I'm sorry.
There you go. There you go.
So definitely LinkedIn. I'm there often and have a lot to say about themes that I'm excited about, companies that I'm digging into, and just overall more about what I'm learning.
Amazing. We'll point to that in the show notes. We'll point to your pod and your newsletter as well. And well, Sydney, you know what? To your point at the very beginning of the conversation here, you've got the check in hand. You have the opportunity to be one of the folks that shapes the world So I wish you the very best of luck and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Have a good one.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.